You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick announcement. Next Friday, we're going to have brunch with Bernie. I'll be on the road in Plainfield, Vermont, and we'll be doing the show live from WGDR, Goddard College Community Radio, 91.1 FM in Plainfield, 91.7 FM in Hardwick. Plus, Saturday evening, Goddard College presents the Alternative Media Conference. Actually, it's all day Saturday, featuring keynote speakers like me and Ellen Ratner. For tickets, information, all that kind of stuff, go to Goddard, GODDARD.EDU. And this is, of course, near Montpelier, Vermont, for those of you in the area. So, it is Friday. That means it is time for Brunch with Bernie, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us from Burlington, Vermont. How are you, Senator?
I am great, Tom, and it's going to be great that you're coming to Vermont to do an alternative media conference that is an issue of enormous significance, and I'm sure you're going to have great crowds out there at Goddard College. On Saturday, actually, in the state of Vermont, we're doing something that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have the ambassador from Denmark coming, and we're going to do a town meeting on Saturday noon in Burlington City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going down to Brattleboro, and on Sunday we're going to do something in Montpelier. And the reason that I am bringing the Danish ambassador to the United States, to the state of Vermont, is that I think it's important that people understand there are different social models out there around the world. And I think a lot of people, when they look at what's going on in the United States, very high unemployment, the only country in the world without a national health care program, very bad pension system, inadequate child care, enormous disparities in income and wealth. And people say, well, that's the way it is. It must be all over the world. Well, the answer is it's not. You have some Scandinavian countries like Denmark, Sweden, Norway, who have done a much better job in creating a social safety net which protects ordinary people. So you have in countries like Denmark a healthcare system which guarantees healthcare to all people, and it's a very popular system. People feel pretty good about it. And it costs almost half as much per person as our healthcare system. They have a child care system which three-quarters of the payment comes from their government. They have family leave, which is much, much stronger than what we have in terms of when you have a baby. Stronger unemployment benefits, job training, college education there is free. Now, all of those things end up costing money. And the amount of taxes that people in Denmark pay on a progressive basis is more than we pay in the United States. But they get a lot more in return. But I think it's important. And what ends up happening is if you don't have to worry about health care because it's covered, if you don't have to worry about the cost of higher education because it's covered, if you don't have to worry about child care because it's significantly covered, if you don't have to worry about loss of income when you have a baby because that's covered, and you don't have to worry about your retirement because you have a pretty strong retirement system, what ends up happening is you live under less stress. And when they do these international surveys about people's happiness and well-being, Denmark often comes out quite high. So I think there's something for us to learn. We are a very different country. We're much, much larger than Denmark, much more diverse than Denmark, different history than Denmark. But I wanted to bring the ambassador here just to talk about a social system which is in many ways different than ours. It's a capitalistic society, to be sure. But they have done a much better job in using the wealth gained from that system to protect their children and their vulnerable people and their middle class than we have, I think.
Yeah, you know, we did our show for an entire week from Denmark. The Danish radio loaned us a studio.
I remember that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago, yeah.
And what was your impression of Denmark?
It was astounding. We had a wonderful time. I was on Danish TV. You know, they invited me to come on their national television and interview me as the American. And the guy was like, is it true that in America people can actually go bankrupt if they get sick? And I was like, yeah, it's half of all bankruptcies. And the guy says, no, you're just making that up.
Yeah.
I mean, it just...
And the point, well, I'm glad that you did that because the media in general in this country does not talk about some of the important programs and ideas that are existing around the rest of the world. So, we're going to bring the Danish ambassador. I'm glad that you were able to broadcast the week's worth of shows from Denmark. They have a lot to be proud of, and I think it's something that we should look at and see what can work in the United States.
Yeah.
This week we had a very good rally. We work with some senior groups to put together a rally in the capital on Social Security. We had Jack Reed of Rhode Island, Elizabeth Warren was there, and we had a number of people from the House. I guess Peter DeFazio was on your show
yesterday,
the other day, and talking about the need to firmly oppose the so-called chain CPI. And I am beginning to feel that we may win this fight. You have virtually all Republicans who want to cut Social Security, have wanted to do it for many years. Tragically, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, became on board that effort. As I've mentioned many, many times, this is not just a little tweak. If you're 65 and this so-called chain CPI were to go into effect, by the time you're 75, you'd lose about $650 a year. And as chairman of the Veterans Committee, I am very concerned that the so-called chain CPI would result in cuts in benefits for disabled vets amounting to tens of thousands of dollars if somebody was disabled when they were young throughout their lifetime. So we're going to fight hard to make sure that we do not balance the budget on the backs of seniors, on the backs of disabled vets, or cut other programs that in the middle of this terrible recession working families desperately need. There are ways to do deficit reduction, and that is, you ask, the wealthiest people in this country are doing phenomenally well, and the largest corporations who are enjoying record-breaking profits to start paying their fair share of taxes, and you can do that quite simply given the fact that one out of four major corporations pays nothing in taxes right now. They're enjoying these unbelievable loopholes that enable them to put their profits in the Cayman Islands, other tax havens. So we're working on that issue, but the key point here is that with sequestration and everything else, we cannot continue to balance the budget on the backs of a middle class which is already being decimated, Median family income has gone down $5,000 since 1999. Almost all of the new income being created in American society today goes to the top 1%. Disparities in income wealth are just unbelievable. So we gotta maintain that important fight. One of the issues that I want to be, we do a Bernie buzz, and I look forward to listeners going to our website, sanders.senate.gov, and taking a look at it. This week we're going to feature youth unemployment, because as bad as unemployment is in this country, and real unemployment as opposed to official unemployment is close to 14%, it is much higher for young people. And I worry very, very much. You know, imagine these kids, whether you're high school graduates or whether you're college graduates, you get out, you want to get out into the world, and there are just not the jobs there for you, or in some cases there are jobs if you're a college graduate, but you don't need a college degree to do it.
Jobs at Burger King kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it is, what a way to begin your adult life, by being unemployed or by not getting a job that you're qualified to fill. So this is an issue I want to focus attention on because it is terribly important. We'll pick it up after the break.
Okay. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Your opportunity to speak with the United States Senator, ask him your question. Senator Sanders' website, he mentioned the Bernie Buzz just a minute ago. It's a great newsletter, and you can sign up for it over at sanders.senate.gov. Of course, it's free, and it's great.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the weapons of mass deception. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls, answering your questions on the issues of the day. Laura in Sebring, Florida, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator. It's good to talk to you. You're my hero.
Thank you.
I'm on your Facebook page. I just love you so much because you stand up for the American people. But what I want to know is these veterans that are disabled, are they going to be cut with this change CPI?
Yes, they will. Right, let me just say that, Laura, you know, and again, as the chairman of the Veterans Committee, I am going to do everything I can to stop this. And we have some, you know, ideas to make sure that these cuts don't happen. But can you imagine, at a time when we have so much income and wealth inequality in America, where the wealthiest people are becoming wealthier and their tax rates are relatively low, we have one out of four corporations not paying a nickel in taxes, that the way some people want to do deficit reduction is by cutting benefits for men and women who've lost their arms and their legs defending this country. I mean, that to me is so obscene and so unspeakable that I don't even like to go into great length. That is absolutely not what this country is about. A lot of these, you know, folks came home, they got lost their legs in Iraq, Afghanistan at the age of 21, 22, their whole lives. They got to rebuild their whole lives, start anew, and to cut back on some of the benefits that they were promised is just not acceptable. But to answer your question is yes. And in the course of the lifetime of that vet, say that he was injured at the age of 20, we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars less than he otherwise would have gotten. So we are going to fight that, but that is the sad truth.
Mike in Whitefish, Montana, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Hartman, for taking my call, and thank you, Senator, for being available. My question comes down to, Senator, in 2012, you sponsored an amendment on the Farm Bill to label, have states have the right to label genetically engineered foods, and since the 2013 Farm Bill is likely to be the only Farm Bill that passes Congress, will you again please sponsor an amendment to label genetically engineered foods?
The answer is yes. It's an issue that I feel very strongly about, and I think a whole lot of people in this country, including mothers and fathers who want to make sure that they know what they're serving their kids, they also feel strongly about. And it's a fairly conservative amendment. And by the way, what it says is states should have the right to do labeling of genetically modified food if they so choose. I mean, it's a pretty conservative concept. This is being done, as I recall, throughout Europe. It's not a new idea, and it should be done in the United States. I think, so to answer your question, Mike, yes, we intend to go forward with that.
Dave in Buffalo, New York, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, Bernie and Tom, thank you so very much. I love you both.
Thank you, Dave.
My question is, how do the working poor afford Obamacare? My understanding is that he's going to reduce the amount of taxes on the poor so they can afford the health insurance. But if you're making 20 grand and they take $20 a week out, and you multiply that by the weeks in the month, and then you figure out how much the total amount of the health care is going to be, it still is out of our price range. Am I understanding that correctly, or
I tell you the truth, and maybe Tom and I should spend some time on that. I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I don't want to misspeak. I don't think what you're saying is quite accurate, and I think the Obamacare will protect lower income working people, but it's an issue that we should go into in a definitive way, and I apologize for not having the information in front of me. Tom, why don't we put that on the agenda for a future show?
Okay. That sounds like a good plan.
It's going up. Dave, I apologize. I don't think what you're saying is accurate, but I don't have the numbers in front of me.
There is a website that the administration has put up that has a lot of those answers. It's called healthcare.gov, and people can check that out.
Let me just say this, what I do know, Dave, is one of the important features of Obamacare is, and it's long overdue, is to bring a whole lot of people into health insurance who today don't have it. We're talking about 30 million people, half getting Medicaid and half getting into the exchanges with federal help. But the other aspects of Obamacare, which are very important, are the ability of young people who are in families whose parents have health insurance to be able to stay on that health insurance till the age of 26. Just ironically, in my office here in Burlington, a couple of hours ago, I met a young man who was dealing with epilepsy, has had seizures throughout almost his entire life. The drugs that he needs cost over $20,000 a year.
Well,
$20,000 a year. And he is now able to stay, I think he's 25 now, on his parents' program because of Obamacare. So there are some strong elements of Obamacare, some that are not so good that we want to improve upon. But to answer Dave's question, we should have the definitive information in front of us.
Okay. We have only about 45 seconds before the break at the bottom of the hour, Bernie. Anything you wanted to go off on?
All right. Well, the only thing I wanted, let me revert back to this issue of the Postal Service, because I think there are a lot of listeners out there. The key issue here is ending this onerous burden of pre-health care. And if we do that, we can make the Postal Service strong, protect rural post offices, protect the mail processing plants, make sure that mail delivery is done on a in a timely manner, protect tens and tens of thousands of jobs, and also prevent this, what we call a death spiral, by cutting and cutting and cutting, lowering the quality of the Postal Service, which will drive more people out of it. So fighting to protect the Postal Service is one of the issues we're working pretty hard on.
Right. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls, answering your questions. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after the news and this break right at the bottom of the hour. Stick around. 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz there, his newsletter. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, and it's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls and offering his thoughts. And Joan in Great Neck, New York, you are and listening on WWRL, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, my name is Joan, and it's really a great honor to speak to you both. I'm a New York City public school teacher. I'm a special education teacher at the middle school level. We are concerned. I wanted to ask you, with the Common Core standards, we all support it, but there seems to be no funding behind it and also no curriculum. Is there anything that the Obama administration will do to help support it? And, you know, children that are way behind grade level that are having difficulty with these Common Core standards, how can either the Obama administration or the Congress support this new initiative?
Well, Joan, You raised an issue which touches on a huge issue, and that is our commitment to public education in this country and our commitment especially for the low-income kids of this country and making sure that they get the education they need to succeed in the 21st century. What I would tell you is there have been some initiatives from the Obama administration getting money out, but what I worry about right now is the impact of sequestration on Title I funding, which will impact low-income schools all over this country. I worry that the child care initiative the president has come up with, an idea which is very important, and that is addressing the child care crisis in this country, in which millions of working families just cannot find affordable child care. Their kids come to school behind. And I don't know that we're going to be successful in finding funding for that as well. So, Joan, I'm not sure that I can give you terribly optimistic news on that. We are in a great funding struggle with the Republican House, who want to cut and cut and cut. And I think unless we turn this around, education is going to be one of the victims of those cuts.
Mary Jo in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. You are the greatest person in Congress. You need to run for president.
Well,
my question goes back to back with the FAFSA. loan program. My daughter fills out her college application FAFSA January 1st. And under Obamacare, they're guaranteed like $5,500. By March 1st, they receive their letter that says what they're going to receive, and then we offset and know what we need to pay for her to start her next year of college. She has received nothing yet. And my question is, does sequester have anything to do with the FAFSA loan program and her getting those government-funded loans?
Mary Jo, that is a great question. I suspect that the answer is yes, but I don't have that in front of me. I would think that the answer would be yes, but sequester cuts does not eliminate. So it would certainly not explain why, as I understand it, you've gotten zero funding. Is that what you're saying?
She said she just hasn't heard back yet.
No, the process may be slowed up. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
But I can't give you an answer. What I would do, Mary Jo, is give your local congressperson a ring, and sometimes they have staff that are pretty good, and they can inquire and find out what's going on.
Manuel in Grays Lake, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Manuel, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. My question is, will you please open and promote a White House petition that addresses stopping free trade and to reactivate our original American industrial policy of tariffs that built the middle class?
Well, Manuel, if you have been listening to the show that Tom Hartman and I have been doing for years now, this is an issue that has come up and up and up time after time after time, and Tom and I agree with you. One of the reasons we're looking at the collapse of the middle class, and one of the reasons why wages are going down, and one of the reasons why we have lost some 60,000 factories in the last 10 years and millions of decent-paying manufacturing jobs has everything to do with unfettered free trade. And NAFTA and CAFTA and permanent normal trade relations, all of which I voted against, was based on total fabrications and a total effort on the part of corporate America to deceive the American people. And the bottom line is that unfettered free trade, in which American workers are forced to compete against people making pennies an hour, has been a disaster for the American working class. So the answer to your question is I am one of the leaders and will continue to be one of the leaders in every way. And if we can get people to sign that petition and let the president know that he's wrong on continuing to push these free trade agreements that came from Reagan and came from Bush 1 and went to Clinton and, and then back to Bush 2 and to Obama. The facts are pretty clear that while we have gained some jobs from exporting, we have lost a heck of a lot more when companies are shut down and moved abroad. So, I very much agree with you, Manuel.
Andy in Pensacola, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I heard you talking earlier today, and you were talking about raising taxes on corporations. You know, it seems to me that that's just the disguise to tax the American people, because corporations just flow the cost through to the people. How do we do that?
Well, Andy, that's not quite accurate. If that were that true, then I can assure you the corporations would not be spending millions of dollars fighting every effort to raise their taxes. We have a situation today where the effective tax rate on corporate profits is the lowest that it has been since, I believe, 1972. And we're in a situation now where corporate taxes as a percentage of all of our revenue is the lowest that it has been in a very, very, very long time. And we're in a situation today where major corporations, like General Electric, go year after year after making billions of dollars in profits, and they pay nothing in taxes. So I think that it is appropriate to ask corporate America to start paying their fair share of taxes, as we have done in the past. And I think it makes a lot more sense for us to do that than it is to cut Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare as we know it or other very important programs. So That is my view, Andy.
Joel, in American Fork, Utah, you're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good. Hey, I heard you talk about Denmark earlier and their single-payer system we have over there.
Yep.
It works for them. I don't think it's the best solution here. My question is, I think we need a hybrid system here in America. And really, to back that up, I have a few statistics. Number one, American doctors have won the Nobel Prize for Medicine more than all the European countries and their doctors combined. And that profit motive has led to amazing advances. But at the same time, no one should ever go broke because they get sick. So with the Democrats screaming single payer, single payer, single payer, and the Republicans screaming status quo, and both systems end up screwing the average American in one way or another in the long run, where's that happy medium to where we can keep the innovation that's made America great, that's made us prosperous, that's led to, you know, transplants and cancer drugs like Avastin, even though only about 10% of the people that need it actually get it? Where's that? And then where's the making sure people don't go broke?
Well, Joel,
we need a medium. We need a hybrid.
Well, Joel, thanks for your question, and I kind of don't agree with much of what you have said. I don't think the American healthcare system is one of the great healthcare systems in the world. Obviously, there have been some real pioneers, great scientists, great doctors, done fantastic things, and we have some of the best hospitals in the world. No question about that. But I think when you end up with a healthcare system that we have right now, which is in terms of per capita spending, per person spending, we spend almost twice as much as any other country on earth. We spend not twice as much as Denmark, but almost twice as much as they do. They have healthcare for all of their people. Many of their healthcare outcomes are in fact better than ours. And that's true for many other countries as well, who provide healthcare to all people. In terms of prescription drugs, you make the point that there have been a lot of breakthroughs here in the United States, and that's true. But don't forget that a lot of those breakthroughs came as a result of federal funding, and the end result of that is, we end up in many cases with very good drugs, but a lot of people can't afford those drugs. And we end up in a situation where in the United States we end up spending much, much more for prescription drugs than do the people of other countries. I, some years ago, took people in the state of Vermont across the Canadian border to Montreal to buy drugs, which at that time were one-tenth the price, same exact medicine that they were in the United States. So I think the system that we have today is very, very wasteful, very dysfunctional in a whole lot of respects. I do believe that a single-payer solution administered at the statewide level is the way to go. And the waste incurs because you have private insurance companies whose goal in life is not providing good quality health care, to make it as much money as they can. I think that ends up distorting the whole system.
45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls, answers to your questions, right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And check out Sanders.Senate.gov to sign up for the Bernie Buzz, Bernie's newsletter. It is a great news source. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, a line that I borrowed from Senator Sanders many years ago. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls. And Bernie, did you want to finish a thought?
I don't know that we may have gotten interrupted. The bottom line there is, I think you've got a good secretary in Eric Shinseki, the four-star general.
Secretary of the Veterans Administration.
They are undertaking the very, very difficult process of dealing with a record-breaking number of claims coming in, and at the same time, going from paper to paperless. It is not easy. Allison Hickey is the person, the undersecretary assigned to doing that. I could tell you she's working very, very hard. Just met with her at the teleconference this morning. So I certainly do not think that we should be firing her. I think we should be supporting her and giving them the resources to make sure that we significantly improve the claims process, and veterans do not have to wait inordinate amounts of time to get the benefits to which they are entitled, which unfortunately is happening right now.
Marcia in Anger, North Carolina, listening, right, listening on WCPT's.com's website, web stream. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, thank you. I'm so lucky I got in. I was wondering if, Senator Sanders, you would be interested in introducing a Bill of Rights for voting. We sort of bounced it off of what Tom and some other people had worked on, and we fleshed it out. Things like the right to vote, including D.C.'s right to vote, making sure that we have money for elections, qualifying how that all ballot access is the same. I have it written down. I can email it to you if you want to look it over.
The answer is yes, and there are a number of people in the Senate who are working in one way or another on that issue. See, I absolutely agree with everything that you said, whether it's D.C. statehood or whether it is making sure that we do our best to make it as easy and positive an experience as possible for people to participate in the political process. As you know, our Republican friends are doing exactly the opposite. They're trying to put up all kinds of roadblocks, making it harder for people to participate. And clearly we're going to fight that. But at the same time, we also want to make sure that people in this country, the United States of America in the year 2012, 2013, should not have to wait 6, 7, 8 hours in order to participate in the democratic process. So the answer to your question is a big yes. We have got to significantly improve our election system. I believe in same-day registration, where people can register on the day of the election, and we have just got to figure out ways to make it easier for people to participate in the political process, being mindful that we prevent any kind of voter fraud at the same time.
Ken in Great Falls, Montana, watching on Free Speech TV on direct satellite TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You know, about the XL pipeline, you know, when I look at it, they keep telling us it's for our own security. So why don't we pass a law that says any of that oil or any fuels from this country, which will be exported, should have a 30% tax on them. It would be a security tax until America is down to importing 10% of their oil. So we'd have this 30% on anything exported.
This you're wanting on a tax
a lot of other
exporting
stuff.
The oil.
Pardon?
Yeah, but as I understand it, Tom, what Ken is talking about is he is worried about that some of this XL oil coming from Alberta would end up going to Asia and elsewhere, being exported.
Right. Being exported, yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's the main reason why they want to take it down to Texas, I think.
Right. My own view on the pipeline is that I happen to believe that global warming is real. It is an enormously serious problem. Scientists tell us that this problem of which will result and is resulting in extreme weather disturbances, we're going to see more of those. Flooding, droughts, heat waves, it is a huge issue. And I think understanding that we have got to significantly cut carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions in general, opening up that whole Alberta area through the XL pipeline does not make sense to me, and I strongly oppose it.
Okay, we have 2 minutes. One more quick question here. Marie in Albuquerque, New Mexico. A quick question for Bernie, please.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I was wondering, because on Chain CPI, I'm a senior and I'm also a veteran. So that means that I get cut twice with the COLAs. Has anybody brought that up, that a disabled veteran, senior veteran, would be cut twice?
Well, yes, it has been brought up, and clearly that is simply unacceptable. It's unacceptable to be cut once, let alone twice. So, Marie, all I can tell you is this idea, and let me just say a word about the concept of the Chain CPI. The concept is that we are overestimating, that we have been too generous in terms of the COLA, cost of living adjustments, that we're giving to seniors. And I think when seniors hear that, they usually laugh because they know in the last 4 years, 2 years have come and gone where they got zero COLAs at all. So, Marie, what I would tell you is this whole concept of the Chain CPI is faulty. We have over 200 PhD economists who strongly disagree with the logic behind it. I think you're seeing more and more senators and members of the House saying, sorry, we are not going to cut Social Security, and we're not going to cut benefits for disabled vets. So we got to keep moving on that. But your point that it's not only people on Social Security who are going to be cut, or disabled vets, some people receive both, and they're going to be hit twice as hard. That makes the case as to why we should oppose this even stronger. So thanks very much for calling, Marie.
And Bernie, we have about 15 seconds left. A final thought for the day?
Well, my final thought is what it usually is. These are tough times for our country. Big money has a huge impact of what's going on in Washington. And if ordinary people do not stand up and fight back, the future of the middle class is not good. So whether the issue is Social Security or veterans' needs or whatever it may be, get on the phone. There are 800, your senator, your House member, has an 800 toll-free number. Call him, call her, write letters to the editor, fight back.
Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us and for being on the program again today.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
And for the great, great work that you're doing. Yeah. We'll be back. Tommy Christopher is going to drop by from Mediaite about an interesting story, and then we'll get into Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Tommy Christopher is with us. He is the White House correspondent and White House reporter, media correspondent and White House reporter with Mediaite.com. And, while I get my ear here working, Mediaite.com is the website. Tommy, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
So you did a story about a 7-year-old boy suspended for a pencil gun. Tell me about this.
Yeah, his name was Christopher Marshall, and he was suspended for 2 days because he pointed a pencil at a classmate and made a machine gun noise.
And your take on that?
Obviously, I think that it's an overreaction to suspend the kid for 2 days. What I really thought was ridiculous was that they got a quote from the school administrator who said that, you know, they were suspending him on the basis of their zero tolerance policy on weapons, saying that a pencil can be a weapon if it's pointed in a threatening manner and you make gun noises. That's... I just thought it was silly. I mean, you can't, you know, that a pencil doesn't become a threatening weapon because you make a noise with it.
Do you know if there was any, you know, background to this? I mean, if this child had been in trouble, you know, repeatedly for very aggressive behavior, and this just kind of was a point where they had an excuse, crossed that they could use?
No, they said he had a clean record, and then he stopped as soon as they you know, asked him to. And the other thing I found really weird, which they didn't really explain at all, is that they also suspended the other kid, the kid that got imaginarily shot.
Right.
That hardly seems fair.
Yeah.
I think what's at work here is that, you know, kids, you've dealt with school administrators, and, you know, they can be very unimaginative when it comes to dealing with problems. You know, they rather just, they take what they think is the path of least resistance. They don't want to treat anybody as special, you know, treat everybody the same, and just sort of, I don't know how they hoped to get away with this without anybody objecting. That was very silly.
Yeah, it does seem very silly, and I do know about school administrators. I've been one, actually, and I'm just share your and you know, you and I are both progressives, and this seems like the kind of thing that conservatives would be yelling about. Oh, you know, it must be unionized teachers or something like that.
I don't know. I expected to hear more about it, but I don't know. Maybe it's maybe we found something that everybody can agree on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every now and then somebody just goes too far in whatever direction, and you know, crazy things happen. Does this, do you think, reflect, or maybe in we shouldn't even put it onto this story, but you know, in general, and I mean, you know, you're the White House reporter there, you check that out, you've got your finger on the pulse of America, as it were, in many regards, as a reporter.
Right.
Do you think that the gun I'm reluctant to use the word hysteria. All of the energy that's being put into, for example, background checks. Folks on the right are like, you guys are being hysterical. You guys, you know, this is, you know, everything's fine. You know, chill out. You know, Wayne LaPetite, he says, you know, we don't need no stinking background check. Are we overreacting? I mean, back when somebody called in yesterday and they said, you know, when Reagan was shot, it was a no-brainer to pass the Brady Bill or some variation on it and assault weapons bans. And, you know, you shoot a Republican and holy cow. But when 20 kids are murdered in Newtown and there have been, you know, hundreds since then, it's not a Republican. Or maybe a few of them are, actually. But what's your sense of how America is dealing with this?
Well, I don't think that I do think that this story sort of feeds into the idea that maybe there's like a hysterical overreaction going on, which is unfortunate because I don't think that there's been an overreaction. I think the thing that people miss out on is that, you know, they keep saying things like, you know, that you know, there are other things that kill people more frequently, et cetera. Mm. But, you know, the reason that this is not an overreaction is that these are preventable deaths. You know, there are things, you know, we are so far from doing not just the most that we can to prevent deaths, but anything at all to prevent deaths. And no, that of course is not an overreaction. I mean, you think that this background check bill, without background checks, you know, what we're saying is not just, you know, a possible criminal, like a convicted murderer can now get purchase a weapon without a background check.
Right. Somebody who has a background of beating their wives or assaulting people or, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think that there's any way to characterize any of this as an overreaction. And, you know, I do think that, you know, I've also been writing out, I wrote an article this afternoon about another 2-year-old who shot and killed himself in Texas last night.
Accidentally.
Yes. And there have been, and, you know, Rachel Maddow talked about this last night. Like, you know, are we just noticing this or is this really an epidemic? But, I mean, since April, there have been something like 20 of these shootings where the children were the shooters themselves, either shooting other children or themselves. There was one, it was a 2-year-old girl, who shot her mother in the stomach, you know, unintentionally.
Right.
And so I feel like, you know,
well, the NRA line is, you know, guns don't kill people, kill people, but how can, you know, which assumes a certain level of intent and malice. When you're talking about a 5-year-old killing their 2-year-old sister, or a 2-year-old accidentally shooting their mom, I mean, that becomes a nonsensical statement, does it not?
Well, yeah, and then here's an amazing thing I found out this week that I did not know, and you might not know either. But, you know, the NRA pays lip service to being about gun safety, and they have a brochure that tells parents to keep their guns secure.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they also tell their members, even the parents, not to lock up their guns because that'll make them sitting ducks in a home invasion. So they're talking about they're actually telling parents not to lock their guns up, even as they're sort of covering their own asses by saying, "Yeah, sure, you should lock your guns up."
Wow.
And I think that the lesson to be taken from the most recent, you know, like I said, there's been a good 20 or so of these of kids just getting guns and shooting themselves or other people, is that you know, people need to be, we don't need a law for this. People need to be more aware of how they're storing their guns,
right.
and not be overconfident. You know, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are cases where people are normally very vigilant and they're just a momentary lapse and it can be tragic. And if the media would report on it more, then it might happen less.
Yeah, maybe the gun safe business is what we should be encouraging rather than the weapons manufacturing business. I'm curious, yeah. Kelly Ayotte, you've covered the political beat here. Kelly Ayotte, the new Republican senator from New Hampshire, is taking a lot of heat for having voted against background checks, against closing the gun control loophole on background checks. And the NRA, I believe, somebody anyway, is funding an ad in which people who represent themselves as average New Hampshire, you know, housewives are saying, "Oh, we like Kelly Ayotte. She's standing up for the what's good and right." Turns out that it's like former staffers of hers and the head of the Republican Party in New Hampshire, you know, pretending to be average people. Is she going to make it through this? Are the others going to make it through this? Is there going to be a revote? We just have a minute here, Tommy.
Yeah, I think that there's been a massive amount of polling showing that this vote is hurting people. And I think that if there is a revote, I mean, they weren't that, you know, what was it, 54 to 46?
Right.
I think that, you know, all they really need are two Republicans, and I think the four Democrats who voted no will switch. I mean, I think that if they knew that they could make 60, they would have made that yet. They would have voted for it. So, yeah, I think if it gets a revote, there's a good chance it passes.
Yeah. And so now Harry Reid is saying, you want to revote on the gun thing? First, you got to talk about immigration. This is an interesting little bit of political theater. Tommy Christopher, the media correspondent, White House reporter for Mediaite.com, MediaIte.com. Tommy, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Always nice talking to you. 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And it's Anything Goes Friday. Your calls on whatever you would like to talk about. I've got a few things to rant about. We'll continue on through the day. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Just a few interesting headlines. Just, yeah, every now and then I'll just grab one of these websites and just share some of the headlines with you. I thought Daily Kos today did a particularly good job of having interesting headlines. Heritage Foundation gets support of prominent conservative radio hosts paid to support them. I had not realized that the Heritage Foundation for years and years has been paying Rush Limbaugh. Yes. I mean, nobody. Let me, for the record, just say, you know, there's all these, there's not all these, but there's a few progressive think tanks out there, Center for American Progress. Let's see what else is there. I think that's about it. I think that's about it. But in any case, nobody pays me. So just for the record, talk show hosts getting paid by think tanks. Interesting. Secondly, if this is the best Rove can do on Hillary and Benghazi, he should stick to math. And they talk about this ad now that's running, that Karl Rove is running, that his PAC GPS is running. They're trying to rough up Hillary Clinton in anticipation of her running for president in 2016. In which, you know, they reprise her ad against Barack Obama from the primaries about, you know, it's 3 a.m. and the phone call comes. Only they say, you know, it's 2 a.m. and she actually did get a phone call about what was going on in Benghazi. And then they take a quote from Thomas Hicks completely out of context. They take the first sentence of the quote and use it in the ad and then ignore the rest of it. So Karl Rove, once again, you know, lying to the American people. A paramedic was arrested in West Texas. We don't know what's going on with that, but this guy was arrested for on a charge of possession of a destructive device. Could this be the cause of, you know, could it be that fertilizer factory explosion was intentional? This story is developing. Coburn, Tom Coburn, Dr. No, they refer to him as, because he put so many holds on so many bills during the first 4 years of the Obama administration. The Republican from Oklahoma comes out and says, ever since Obama started letting guns into the national parks, the crime rate has dropped by 85%. Well, no, not so much. The crime rate all across the United States has been dropping for the last decade or so. The general consensus is that this has nothing to do with more guns. It has to do with the fact that we took lead out of our gasoline about 30 years ago. And, in fact, we've seen these studies done country after country after country. You take lead out of the gasoline, and about 15 years later, you start seeing the crime rate drop. Because babies who are born exposed to lead, apparently the major effect it has on their neurological system, besides lowering their IQ, is lending them more toward aggression and violence and what we would call criminal behavior. But the fact of the matter is that crime in our national parks is pretty much unchanged. It depends on which years you're looking at. Coburn quoted 2 years where he said it was an 85% drop. It was actually a 12% drop, but that's 2008 to 2011 or something like that. But if you pick, you know, just 1 year off from either of those years, there's actually was an increase buff, Coburn's just making up numbers. So when his office was confronted about the fact that he was making up numbers, the communications director for Tom Coburn, basically his press guy, said the senator misspoke. Right.
So, and I just wanted to toss this in, and then I'm going to toss back to your calls. Elizabeth Colbert Bush lost the election to Mark Sanford in South Carolina, this congressional runoff election. And there is a fairly substantial pile of evidence that the reason she lost the election was because of continuous telephone push-polling pointing out that she had been involved back 2.5 decades ago in a divorce. Her husband was abusive. She and her husband had he apparently was so abusive towards her that they were taken into custody for a few hours one day. And the Republicans tried to turn this into something that it wasn't, just like in 2000 when Bush was getting the pants beat off him by John McCain. John McCain had this upset victory in New Hampshire. He was the comeback kid. He was going to be the Republican nominee in 2000. And it all, at that point, was hanging on South Carolina. And John McCain, he and his wife, they were actually in Bangladesh. They adopted this orphan girl who's Bangladeshi, if that's the right way to say it, who has very, very dark skin. I mean, that's central part of Asia, southern Asia. And so this campaign, this telephone push-poll campaign, would you vote for John McCain if you knew that he had a black child, African-American child, out of wedlock? Which was not the case. So it was the same thing. It was this distortion of the reality. And it got so bad, apparently, that on the day of the election, Elizabeth Colbert Bush had to come out and say, that was 2.5 decades ago. In other words, she had to address it because this whispering campaign had gotten so aggressive. And I just find it astounding the depths to which the Karl Roves of our country have taken our politics. And I also find it astounding that when a Republican spends state money and leaves his job to go off and hop into bed with a girlfriend in another country, as soon as he says, yes, I sinned, and invokes the name of God, all is forgiven. Sort of like, David Vitter and the hooker. Or Dick Morris and the hooker. I don't know. He had to become basically a conservative to be forgiven. But a Democrat, I mean, they're still mumbling under their breath about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. And they tried to impeach Bill Clinton about that. Can you imagine? I mean, it's like we have like these two different sets of standards. Or maybe if you're a Republican, you can just magically invoke God's forgiveness and pretty much anything can be forgiven in the political world. And I just find that odd, bizarre, frankly, a bizarre commentary on the state of politics in the United States. So anyhow, just for the record, I just wanted to lay that out. We'll be back with your call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's Anything Goes Friday. Whoa, somebody got a robocall about Sarah Palin? Well, that's going to be interesting. Picking up your calls right after this. Welcome back. Next Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie on the road from Plainfield, Vermont. Senator Sanders will be, I'm not sure if he's going to be in the studio or if he's going to be on the phone, but I will be there at WGDR Goddard College Community Radio. Plus, Saturday evening, Goddard College presents the Alternative Media Conference. And so for information about that, go to goddard.edu. Also, for our TV show, The Big Picture, if you would like your questions answered, your video questions, just take a picture of yourself with your cell phone or your smartphone or whatever it may be, asking a question, and email it to yourtakemytake@gmail.com. And you may appear on the TV machine. Amazing. Shock in Indianapolis, Indiana. It says you want to disagree with me, so put you at the top of the line. What's up?
Tom, I got to tell you, my thought on this whole gun issue, I got no problem with background checks. I'm a gun owner. but legislation can't fix stupid. How these kids are killing their siblings or shooting their moms, not because of the weapon. The weapon is an inanimate object. Can't be fired without somebody firing it. But you can't fix stupid. And stupid people leaving guns out where kids can get their hands on it, you can't fix that. You can't legislate that. None of the laws that have been proposed are going to change.
So, Shock, do you think that if there had been no gun in that house, that 2-year-old could have shot his mom?
Not my call. I don't. It couldn't have happened without the gun being there. But the,
right.
The
so it, what's wrong with our saying? You know, maybe this gun culture thing is just gone a little nuts. You know, I there are still some parts of the country. I mean, I used to live in rural Vermont. Louise and I lived outside of Northfield, Vermont, and you know, lived out in the woods. And you know, I get hunting. I grew up in Michigan. I've never done it, but I get it. And I got a lot of friends who used to go hunting every year. And but you know, that's a very small minority of Americans. So say, okay, that's cool. And I get target shooting. I do it myself. But that's a very small minority of Americans. And frankly, I think there's a relatively small minority of Americans who feel that they are who actually genuinely need to have a weapon for protection. So why not have some reasonable gun control laws like, A, if it's a weapon of war, you can't have it. B, if you own a gun, it has to be registered just like your car has to be registered. C, if you own a gun, you have to have liability insurance just like your car has liability insurance. And the only reason for that is because cars can kill people. Guns are designed to kill people. And D, if you want to own a gun, you have to demonstrate that you know how to use one safely and responsibly, just like you have to do with a car. What's wrong with that? And by the way, all these things that I just proposed are so radical that probably even most Democrats would not even contemplate them. But as a rational gun owner yourself, does this make sense to you?
Absolutely, but that's not the issue here.
Well, here's my take on it, Shock. If you ask people to go through a good training course, and this could be a business opportunity for the NRA, if you had them demonstrate proficiency, if there was insurance, the insurance companies would be, you know, looking at people's histories, and if the guns were registered, I frankly think that would be the cure for stupid.
But that would not have changed what happened there because of stupidity. I choose not to leave ammunition in my weapon. I choose because I know it's smart.
Right.
I choose to leave my weapons locked up when they're not.
But Shock, you didn't just learn that from, you know, the cosmic goose flying over and dropping it on your head. I mean, I'm assuming that either you grew up knowing people who knew how to use firearms and they taught you, or you attended a course somewhere and learned how to appropriately use firearms. I agree that there's an element of common sense here, but still, you didn't learn all that stuff just out of nowhere, did you?
99% of that is just basic human common sense. It's no different than when I go diving, scuba diving. I have checklists I follow.
Sure.
Not because I got it, but because I want to be safe. I don't want to put my life in somebody else's hands. I control what happens to me, and I'm not going to do anything.
Oh, I understand that, but you know, that said, if you're diving, I mean, in most places, if you're diving anything more than a resort dive, you've got to have some sort of certification. I mean, we're back to the let's filter out stupid by making sure that people have demonstrated proficiency. I'm guessing that you've demonstrated your proficiency as a diver.
Weapons training. Absolutely support that. I got no issue.
I think that a lot of these people who are leaving their guns around where their kids are getting them and are shooting each other or shooting their parents or whatever, a lot of these people, if they had to go through a course, that either the instructors would flunk them out or they would get it that, you know, it's not such a good idea to leave a loaded weapon where a kid can get it.
I agree. One last thing, not related to guns, but I want to disagree with you on one other thing.
Okay.
They didn't try to impeach Bill Clinton. They did impeach him. He was not convicted in the Senate.
You're correct.
You're
absolutely correct.
You and I are on the same page there.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The House of Representatives did impeach Bill Clinton, and they took away his law license. and there was some other consequence, too. He had to pay some kind of fine or something, and he got disbarred. And they were one vote short of removal from office in the Senate. You're right. It's a two-step process. First, you have to go through the House, then you go to the Senate. Shock, thanks for the call. Andrea in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Andrea, what's up?
Hi, good. How are you doing?
Great. What's on your mind today?
I'm a big fan. I've always learned something listening to your show, so my first time calling you.
Thank you.
I wanted to say, with regard to the gun aspect, I find it interesting, and I'm not referring to the most recent caller there, but in general, the people who flail the most about saying that background checks won't do any good, a lot of the same right-wingers are insisting upon immigration reform requiring that undocumented immigrants who want to become citizens have three background checks.
Well, not just that. And they want a background check before you can vote.
Exactly. So my point is, are they effective or are they not effective? And, you know, make up your mind. Personally, I think they can be. I kind of go with the governor of Maryland, who says that they should be fingerprint-based background checks. The reason being is that it is easy for people, especially if it means that they can get hold of a firearm, to get false identification and pass themselves off as someone else who has a clean record. Who might, you know, especially if they're in the system. So if they really need to be, and it's not really been talked about enough, but it should be, because the background checks that are done right now through NICS are name checks only.
Right. Name and social security number.
They are not fingerprint based, and therefore, and really both sides of this, not only could you miss somebody who shouldn't have a gun, you could erroneously reject somebody who should be allowed to have one.
Right. Yeah, excellent point. I think the biggest point, though, is why is it that the guys who are running around yelling and screaming, we've got to make sure, well, last year they made sure that 9 million Americans could not vote. We got to make sure that, that people are not illegally voting, right? That they're not, you know, they're not fraudulently voting, that they're not eligible to vote, but they're actually, we got to make sure that we got to do background checks on voters. Oh, but to buy a gun? No, we don't need no stinking background checks. I think there's something fundamentally flawed with that logic. Andrea, thank you for calling and pointing it out. Excellent point. Sally in Chico, California. Hey, Sally, what's up?
Well, I first want to thank you for the truth and the opportunity to discuss important topics that you bring to the media.
Thank you.
I called to support you in what you've reiterated a couple times today on the gun. Get your license, get trained.
And get insured.
Own a gun. I taught middle school for 39 years in a small rural community in Northern California, and very much hunting and outdoor stuff goes on in that area.
Mm-hmm.
They take hunter safety. They have to take hunter safety, or they can't even go hunting.
To get a hunting license.
That's why we don't have a lot of problems in our area with people using guns improperly.
So in California, in order to get a hunting license, you have to take a gun proficiency course?
Yeah, it's called GIDS, and I'm not sure. Many years ago, went to UC Davis and was on the women's rifle team many years ago, and I've always enjoyed the challenge of target shooting and stuff like that. I never liked killing things.
Yeah,
but
me too.
I'm not sure about adults, but the children, I think it's at least for sure if they can shoot 12 and up, I think 12 is the minimum age that they can take the hunter safety.
Huh.
And they have to pass it. And I've seen the booklet and the pamphlet. It has all kinds of really good information. And, you know, when I was a kid, my dad said you don't have a loaded gun anytime, anywhere, unless you're going to be out shooting it. And, you know, he said you'd never point a gun at anybody, period, the end.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people can't get that. And,
yeah. My mom grew up with guns, and or at least when she was very young. Her father died when she was 13 of a heart attack, but he was a hunting enthusiast. And I remember as a little kid, my mom, and I have younger brothers. My mom just grabbing a toy gun that I had as I was pointing at my brother and saying, do not ever point even a toy gun at somebody else, you know. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, how are we going to play cowboys and Indians? But you know, she was just so, she had really had that trained into her. Sally, thank you for the call. Yeah, excellent point. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Guess I'm just missing my mom at one of those days. Anyhow, quarter two, 15 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll be back with more of your calls. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday. Ellen Ratner is going to be with us in just a second. But first, I just have to get this one call in. In fact, I'm guessing Ellen is going to want to hear this. Jim, in Vita, Montana, you got a robocall last night about Sarah Palin running for the Senate?
Yep. Greetings from Glenbeckistan.
Okay. So if you can very quickly tell me about it, because I want to get Ellen on and get our newscast here.
Okay. I get a lot of robocalls, and it's always the same voice, and the guy's pretty much hysterical, and he says he's it's a Tea Party Patriots calling. I've got him on Stop Obama's Socialist Agenda, Stop Obamacare, Stop Obama Gun Confiscation, and last night I got one. They wanted $100 or $200 to give to Sarah Palin in her bid for U.S. Senate in Alaska, so the Tea Party can take back the Senate.
Amazing. And so that means they'd be going after Mark Begich. I don't think there's going to be an open seat in Alaska, though, for three more years. I think that because you had Lisa Murkowski last year, and then it was 2 years before that was Mark Begich, or else maybe I've reversed the order of them. But that's interesting. Jim, thank you for calling. Thanks for the heads up on that. That's fascinating. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoats.com, where you can give a crystal heart made by women recovering from the effects of war in South Sudan. Ellen, welcome.
Well, thank you. You know, just when you think it won't get any crazier, like we just heard from the caller in Alaska, there is a group called Right Wing Watch, and they reported it, and now it's made its way around, so it's not our news story, but I thought you'd be interested in anyhow, that Michelle Bachmann has spoken, I believe today, at a National Day of Prayer and Fasting she would like to have happen on September 11th. She said, judgment has been passed down by God on that day. Is there anything better we can do that day than humble ourselves to pray before the Almighty God?
So these guys want to make George Bush's intelligence failure a sacred holiday.
I guess so, yes. And I was actually speechless when I heard about that.
Yeah. Eventually Americans are going to figure out that 9/11 was a massive intelligence failure of the Bush administration. I mean, had Bill Clinton been president, he would have been impeached for allowing that to happen.
Speaking of impeachment,
yes,
they are now saying that they would like to impeach the president over Benghazi.
President Obama.
That's right.
Because four people died.
Oh, that's right.
But they didn't want to impeach
Bush.
And
they say that he lied. Now, I will say this. The White House is not doing themselves any favors. Today, they had a briefing, which was scheduled at 12:30. He usually shows up about 12:45. And what they did is they called a small group of reporters in for an off-the-record on Benghazi. My friend April Ryan, who is on the board, she's the American Urban Radio representative, and she is the radio representative for all of us White House correspondents who are in radio on the board of the Correspondents Association. April tweeted that people are not very happy. And what they did is they selected who was going to go to this off the record. They didn't tell everybody, hey, we're going to do an off the record briefing, but we're going to do it, you know, here or in the Roosevelt Room or wherever they choose to do it. They selected what reporters, and of course, every other reporter talked to the other reporters.
Well, and not only that, it sounds like they're hiding something.
Exactly. Why do that? I mean, they're not, I just want to say to them, you're not helping yourselves out in this situation.
Yeah.
I mean, that feeds right into the right wing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who's doing their communications, but they're not talking.
Or their political strategy. I mean, it's just the, hey, let's cut Social Security. That's a brilliant idea for a Democratic president. You know, the chain CPI. Anyway, don't get me started.
I mean, you and I should write a book on our recommendations.
Well, I already did. It's called Rebooting the American Dream, and it's 11 policy steps that came out just before the election.
We need communication steps.
Yeah, well, I wrote that book. It's called Cracking the Code.
Okay.
Political communication. So,
well,
but I would love you to.
I'm telling you, Tom.
You can write the next forward for it.
Right. Okay. So, some other things going on.
Yeah.
Karl Rove, apparently, you know, he has his American crossroads.
Yep.
He's now released an ad that targets former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton over their response to Benghazi.
Right.
It's a minute and 30-second spot, so I don't know who's going to carry that long, but, of course, people watch it on the Internet. And it links the attacks to what she did and what people told her ahead of time. And so there, Karl Rove, who, by the way, just got the contract from the Republican National Committee to do all of their, all their data mining and all that. And apparently the Tea Party people are unhappy with it. But Karl Rove clearly sees Hillary Clinton is what's they're going to be up against in 2016, and he is using this opportunity to go after her.
Yeah, that's obvious. And Daryl Issa is the tip of the spear right now.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of that it's all over the Drudge Report, but it's elsewhere as well. The IRS is apparently apologizing for talking or flagging Tea Party groups for a higher level of scrutiny for their tax returns.
Right.
They
this was done by a local office.
Et cetera.
This was done by a local office. And nobody's pointing out that the IRS commissioner is a holdover Bush appointee.
I mean, this is crazy. And the fact is, all right, so one group looked at it. Well, you know something? They used to look at gay groups. They used to look at CISPs under my brother Michael, when my brother Michael was their attorney. The 1 year before it was like okay to be gay, in 1988, I owned a house with my partner. They wanted to know what, they sent me back a letter saying, this was under Bush, of course, what was our relationship. So, I mean, this has been going on for years, but how come right now they're targeting one area?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, I was talking about impeachment. Yes, this was not so much ISA. This is James Inhofe. He told our friend Rusty Humphries today that Barack Obama's involvement in Benghazi may be an impeachable offense.
Wow. Amazing. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Ellen, thank you for the update today.
Thank you.
Great talking with you, as always. We will be back. It's Anything Goes Friday, 2 minutes before the top of the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes past the hour. Well, the resident racist over at the Heritage Foundation, what's his name? Richwine, wasn't it? Just resigned. Isn't that sweet? Yeah, Jason Richwine. Dave Weigel is reporting it via Twitter. Dave is a reasonably good reporter. I think he's probably got it right. He says, Jason Richwine has resigned from the Heritage Foundation. A spokesman confirms to me. And so Brian Butler via Janetter for Mac tweets. This is you can see this over at dailycoz.com. Richwine now all clear to found tax-exempt group High IQ Patriots. Meanwhile, Charles Murray, the guy who wrote The Bell Curve or co-authored The Bell Curve, there were two authors, he was one of them, which is the book that came out about a decade and a half ago that said that basically African-Americans are not as smart as white people. I'm sure he would disagree with my characterization of it as that, but certainly that was my takeaway from it, and I think most of the rest of the press. He just tweeted out, Charles Murray, co-author of The Bell Curve, he just tweeted out, thank God I was working for Chris DeMuth and the American Enterprise Institute and not Jim DeMint and Heritage when The Bell Curve was published. Integrity, loyalty, balls. Like Heritage Foundation, Jim DeMint, you're not going to stand behind your people?
I mean, you know, it's true or it's not. I mean, is it? Did it? Really? So. Meanwhile, in the great state of Massachusetts, where Ed Markey is running to fill that Senate seat, the fellow running against him, Mr. Gabriel Gomez, the Republican candidate, turns out he's just, you know, another incredibly rich white guy. Well, actually, Gomez, a Hispanic guy, maybe. But whatever. He's another incredibly rich Republican. This is to fill John Kerry's empty seat. John Kerry has gone off to be Secretary of State, as you probably caught track of. And he took a $281,500 tax deduction for pledging not to make any changes to the front of his home, even though the local laws forbid him from making changes to the front of his home, because his home is one of these old historic properties. So he got $281,000 for not doing something that he couldn't do. If that makes sense. This is something that the IRS has identified as basically a scam. But this guy wants to be the Republican senator from Massachusetts. Oh, and he knows all about taxes. Yes, indeed. David in La Porte, Texas. Hey, David, thanks for listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. You wanted to talk about somebody who called when Bernie was on and talked and said that, why should we tax corporations? They just pass it along to consumers, right?
That's right, Tom. And I want to say I love your show. Been listening for a couple of years now. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
I want to talk about that because I see these, you know, that ignorant comment made all the time, and it really bugs me. These people have no understanding of supply and demand or capitalism. They either don't think corporations are making any profits, or they think the prices they charge consumers are determined by how nice they are or how much they love us.
Or what their actual costs are.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, actually, the price that they charge consumers are determined by what the market will bear. And there are some products that are mind-bogglingly profitable, and there are some products that are only marginally profitable because some marketplaces are very competitive, some marketplaces are not.
Right. So if a corporation thought they could charge more for a product or service, they'd already be doing it.
Right.
So.
Right. But the bottom line is, I don't want to criticize Bernie for the way he answered it. He had one take on it, and it was a very good take. He went on, you know, started talking about corporate profits. They're not paying their fair share in taxes, and tax collections are an all-time low. That's absolutely true. I personally would have added, or you know, if the question had been asked of me, I would have said the first thing that a corporation does when they have an added expense, like a higher tax, is they reduce their profits. And profits are typically distributed, I mean, I'm talking about real profit, end of the year, after all the accounting is done. A certain portion of those profits are typically distributed as dividends to the stockholders. So the stockholder dividends go down before the price goes up, because the stockholders would say, and sensibly, you know, to Procter & Gamble, for example, or to take a more real-life example, General Electric, which doesn't pay any income, federal income taxes generally. They would say, you know, okay, you know, I'll take, you know, instead of taking $1,000 in dividends this year, you know, on a certain amount of stock, I'll take $900 in dividends this year because I don't want you to raise the price on your toaster ovens by 25 cents because then Whirlpool will outcompete you. Now, I realize I'm using probably products that General Electric doesn't make, and Whirlpool's not even a U.S. brand anymore, and, you know, I'm dating myself here, but that's, you get the point.
I get the point. So, yeah, I mean, the people who argue that, you know, like, corporations can charge as much as they want, and, you know, the price just is determined by them, that's, that's just obviously not very good argument.
Yeah, no, it's not. But the right-wingers love to say, oh, corporations just pass along taxes to their consumers. No, they pass along all their expenses in some ways to consumers and to their stockholders and to their senior executives. At some point, that corporation is going to say, you know, we can't afford to pay our CEO $400 million a year anymore. He's going to have to only, you know, live on $300 million a year because we've got to pay some taxes. You know, so, yeah, there's a variety of things. David, well said. Thank you for the call. Well done.
Janie in Round Rock, Texas. Hey, Janie, what's up?
Hi, good afternoon. I was thinking that there are, for instance, reasons that we do not go off and leave our cars running in the driveway. We have deterrents. Some are buy more gas, or somebody may steal it. But we also have insurance that we have to pay for and maintain. And
right.
We are legally tied to that vehicle.
Right.
So anyone takes our vehicle because we negligently left it running and commits a crime or is injured, we are held financially and legally responsible as well.
Right.
So I am in 1,000% support of your position about guns all the way down the line. It's the only rational, intelligent, grown-up approach to a deadly weapon in the hands of a human. I thought this was a good analogy. Maybe someone could relate to that in a less threatening kind of way for some reason.
That is, that's an excellent metaphor, because if you leave your car running in the driveway or on the street out in front of your house with the keys in the ignition and the engine running and walk away, and some 10-year-old hops in the car and kicks it into gear, and, you know, it runs right straight into a tree, and that 10-year-old is dead. Yes, it is your fault. And most people would realize how stupid that is. And yet somehow people don't realize how stupid it is to leave guns, loaded guns, around their house, in part because, I think that we don't train people. We don't require training. We don't require licensure. We don't require insurance, and we don't require registration of all guns. And I'm with you, Janie. And I think that's a marvelous metaphor. I love it. I love it. May I borrow it?
Add it. It belongs to you.
Okay. Thank you very kindly. Janie, I appreciate the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV there. Hang on. Janie, you still there?
Yes.
Okay. Hang on just a second. Shano says you are going to get a copy of the Tom Hartman Reader autographed by me. So, and sent to you stamps.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Janie's on line 9. Ah, I see Danielle got her. We'll be back at 16 minutes past the hour. Anything goes Friday. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything goes Friday on our program. And Brandon in Mentor, Ohio says, I'm missing the point. Which point?
Okay. Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
Real quick, about you were talking about the accidental gun shootings.
Right.
And I read a study that was done in 2010, and on average, they said in 2010 there were 600 people shot accidentally with guns. Now, one person is too many, but when it comes to the total, less or more people die in pools. Accidental drownings in pool. So if you want
to
take
a pool, when you go to buy a pool, you don't go to buy something that will kill people.
When you buy a gun, you don't buy something that will kill people. That's not the point.
Yes, you do. That's what guns are designed to do.
Kill people.
Yes. Or kill people or animals or whatever. But absolutely,
right.
If I'm buying a gun, if you go in and you say, I want to buy a gun for self-defense, they will say, here's a gun you can use to kill a person.
Okay. I can take my car and kill people, too.
You can, and that's why we require licensure, registration, and proof of proficiency. And we should do the same thing with guns.
Well, I don't think it matters the intent. I think it matters just that it happens. You're right, no one buys a pool to kill people, but they do on accident.
And there are, and we are constantly, but see, again, this is, it's an apples and oranges comparison. I get it that Wayne LaPetite likes to promote that, but the fact of the matter is that pools provide, pools are there for a whole bunch of things. Well, they're there for swimming in, they're there for playing
sure.
in, they're there for recreation, they're there for exercise, they're there for a whole variety of things. They're not there to drown in. And so we do everything we can to minimize drowning in pools and prevent drowning in pools. And we teach, swimming safety, and we teach swimming classes. And there was a time, one of the
Well, you know, John Edwards, early in his legal career, his first big financial windfall was trying a case where a little girl had gotten the pool had such a vacuum at the bottom, and you know, in the recirculating system, that she got her hair caught in it, and it pulled her right down to the bottom of the pool and held her there, and she died. She drowned. And that was a bad design. So when a pool is designed, and that design is no longer on the market. And so if a pool is designed in a way that might kill people or is more likely to kill people, we fix that. It's one of the reasons why typically around pools you don't find slippery surfaces. You find rough surfaces. None of these are the case with guns. Guns are designed to be able to very quickly go, whoop, point it at you, pull the trigger, bang, you're dead.
And yet, all those things you talked about regarding pool safety, and people still die in them because accidents happen. And there's negligence.
Of course.
And it doesn't matter what you're doing. As long as somebody has a gun, there's going to be negligence. And I don't think that any of the things that you proposed would change that.
Actually, I think they would. And as a former owner of a pool, and we lived in Atlanta, we had a pool in our backyard, and it raised my homeowner's insurance. So I had to have, you know, I mean, I don't know if homeowner's insurance is required. It was certainly, at the time that I lived in Atlanta, I had a mortgage on my house. It was required by my bank, so I had no choice. I don't know if you have a fully paid off house, whether you have to have insurance or not. I've never looked into it because I've always insured my houses. But the fact of the matter is that if you have insurance, you are going to do everything you can to make sure nobody, you know, you're conscious of the fact that that pool is a risk, and you know, this is again why I think that with guns we should say, you know, in the 1920s when we figured out when there were enough, you know, the frequency of cars, the number of cars out there, and the frequency of car accidents and the speed at which cars could travel was reaching the point where people were starting to die fairly regularly. And I think, you know, with pools, we've done pretty much everything we can. But with cars, we said, okay, let's do some simple stuff. Let's have some standards for the way that they're used. We came up with red lights and yellow lights and green lights and stop signs. Those were all inventions of the 19-teens and 1920s, late, you know, in that era. Number two, we said, so there's some standards for use. Number two, we said, you have to prove that you know how to use one of these things. Number three, we said you have to be insured. Number four, we said we have to have a continuous registry of ownership. We have to know that you owned it and know who owns this from the time it's made until the time it's destroyed. This is simple stuff. We did this with cars because they could kill people. Why not do it with guns because they can kill people? I'm not saying do away with guns. I've never said that.
Okay. And 62% of all gun deaths in the United States are suicides. You can't prevent suicides.
I disagree with you, Brandon. I disagree with you very strongly on that. I've told this story probably 100 times in the year, so I'll keep it very, very short. But when I was 18 years old, one of my best friends from junior high school came home from basic training at Christmas time and was about to be shipped off. And, I mean, this was back during the Vietnam era. And he went home, and he had a gun, and he put it in his mouth and blew the back of his head all over the wall. And I, to this day, am convinced that I knew Clark really, really well. And I am to this day convinced that if he hadn't been able to easily grab that gun and think, okay, all I got to do is just move this finger, and everything goes dark, and it doesn't hurt. If he had had to go through some painful thing like trying to hang himself or saw through his veins or something, I don't think he would have killed himself.
I've had two close friends that have killed themselves, and one did, just like your friend, blew his brains out, and the other one hung himself. So,
yeah.
You know, I can't take my personal experience and extrapolate it to everybody that's committed suicide.
No, but the fact of the matter is that we know that the more guns are available, the higher the rate of gun suicide.
Well, yeah.
The majority of gun murders in the United States are suicides.
Right.
Let's reduce the availability of guns to those people who are willing to take a course and that they actually know how to use them. I mean, we would be having the same conversation, Brandon, right now. If anybody could drive a car without a driver's license, without insurance, and without the responsibilities associated with ownership, we would be sitting around saying,
You know, if you were with the National Car Manufacturers Association, you'd be saying, well, we don't need registration. We don't, you know, you leave your car in the driveway with the keys in it, the engine running, as the earlier caller said. You know, it's the responsibility of the poor idiot who gets in it. No, it's not.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
This seems like just such simple, common sense stuff. And we can't even get a background check on a gun, you know, for, you know, whether somebody's a drug dealer? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Marty, in Evergreen Park, Illinois, we were talking yesterday with the young man who was putting up the 3D gun for the 3D printers on the web, and the government made him take it down. You wanted to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I mean, it just seems, and to a previous point that your caller made about the pools, in our area, they make you put up fences if you own a pool just to prevent the accidental drownings. But my whole point on the 3D guns is...
Which could be considered the equivalent of requiring gun locks or gun safes if you have a gun.
I completely agree, and I'm very concerned about this this quote unquote liberator, the 3D blueprint for the at home, you know, for the gun that you can literally print at home, and that actually works, that you can fire real bullets out of. And I know the government has been there's been a few sites that have put them up, and then the I think it's the State Defense Department or something have been like emailing these sites asking them to take it down. So I read earlier today that some torrent sites are actually hosting the blueprints, which, I mean, just make it literally next to impossible to eliminate, you know, this
right.
blueprint off the internet. So it's just kind of, and it's not like you're a hobbyist and you're doing your own welding. I mean, you don't have to know a lot about how to use these things in order to print, you know, to print a 3D gun. So I find that very alarming and concerning, and it kind of adds a new aspect to the, you know, to the debate, because you can't really serialize a mass-produced blueprint.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, I think that's going to add a very unique angle, you know, dimension to the whole, you know, to the whole gun, you know, to the whole gun control debate. So I just kind of want to get your thoughts, because I don't have an answer. I don't know exactly, you know, what we can do about that.
I think that when we as a society decide that we're going to not allow something, that we actually have a pretty good track record at keeping it to a, let's say, to a very, very extreme minimum. The example that I used with, what was his name, Travis, I think, the young man who was on Tuesday. In any case, the example that I used with Cody, yeah, Cody was his name, with him was child porn. But I think that there's you know, other things as well that we've banned. I mean, you know, hand grenades, IEDs, shoulder-fired rocket launchers, you know, fully automatic submachine guns. I mean, they've been banned in the United States since the 1930s, and they're pretty hard to find. So, and there are some pretty severe prosecutions for people who have all of those things that I just described. So my guess is that if there is a public consensus, and that's the piece that's necessary, that there's a public consensus about this. Obviously, before 1935, there wasn't a public consensus that we shouldn't have, you know, fully automatic machine guns. And then, you know, the bootlegging era came along, and a lot of civilians, you know, a lot of collateral damage happened in the bootleg wars. And people said, okay, enough already. Let's tone down the guns. And so, you know, as a consequence of that, you know, campaigns happen in public. So if there was strong public opinion that making a gun out of, you know, out of plastic on a printer or resin or whatever these printers use was really a bad thing, that there would probably be a way to prevent it. Just somebody called in yesterday or a couple days ago, or it was the day that we did that show, and said on printers, if you put a $20 bill on a printer and try and hit copy, you know, the really high quality printers, the ones where something might come out that would be good enough to fool of any machine, it will refuse to copy it. It'll only enlarge it or reduce it. And so, I mean, you know, there may be some way to do that
But I think that there has to be that political consensus first. There has to be that societal consensus. And I'm not certain that that exists. I really have no idea, you know, what the majority opinion is about the 3D printer guns. But there certainly seems to be a feeling in the, you know, among the folks who are, like you said, you know, now it's on the torrent sites, people on the web, that this is kind of the new libertarian thing, that you should be able to make your own guns. So I doubt, and the way that the federal government is blocking these now is they're saying that it's a violation of import export laws. I believe that, you know, there's if you're going to manufacture guns, that you have to comply with, you know, the possibility that they might be exported, and so there are certain rules, and you have to have certain licenses, but you know, I don't know, Marty. I genuinely don't know, you know, where this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and the technology is so new. I mean, just the 3D printing technology, that it's really amazing that they were able to kind of bring this so quickly, to the debate. So I mean, we're kind of, the rest of us are still kind of getting our head around the technology, and now it's already used to, not just make like a knife, but make like a usable firearm.
Yeah.
I just find that very alarming.
Yeah. We live in interesting times, Marty. Well, I'm just, you know, watching this thing happen. I just find it fascinating, and we'll see where it goes. I mean, it may go the way of black boxes. You know, there was a time when there were instructions all over the place about, here's how you make this thing that lets you make free long-distance phone calls. And then kind of technology blew that up. But for a while there, they were aggressively illegal, and you could be prosecuted for having black boxes, things that, you know, messed with Ma Bell. You know, as technology changes, things change. We'll see where this goes. Marty, thank you. I genuinely have no answer. I just don't know. Marty, thanks for the call. Zach in Milwaukee, you want a third party?
Well, I just wanted to start with one statement. First of all, I'm an over-the-road truck driver. I have your signed book waiting in the mail. I cannot wait to get home to read it. And I also want to say that people like Michelle Bachman, Wayne LaPierre, thank you for your lunatic comments. You do nothing more than help the progressive movement. Please, please keep going on public and making your insane raving comments. You do nothing more than help us. So thank you for your service.
All right.
but anyways, yeah, I.
So you think Wayne LaPierre, for his $2 million a year salary, is like doing good, he's doing God's work, and that Michelle Bachman is not
No. You misunderstood me. I think for the progressive movement, I think for liberals everywhere, that their insane, crazy rants do nothing but help the progressive movement, because it...
Oh, Wayne LaPierre and Michelle Bachman. Those rants help the progressive movement. Okay, I thought you were talking about my rants. Pardon me for misunderstanding.
Zach. No, sir. You got me wrong. No, I was going to say their insane rants do nothing but help the progressive movement, because it shows it plays their cards. It shows how absolutely insane they are, and it helps us out. And I would say, by all means, keep talking in public, because you do nothing but help us out, because you show how crazy you are.
How crazy I am.
Not how crazy they are. Okay. Yes, how
good.
Crazy they are in their comments.
You know, it's fine with me. Either of the above. Anyhow, what was your point? You wanted to talk about a third party. Let's get there.
We've only got a minute or so here before this music is going to start. I just wanted to say, Democrats as a party on social issues have done a really well job, and I applaud them on that. But when it comes to a lot of economic issues, as far as NAFTA, the banking, Wall Street, and a lot of other issues, I honestly, other than like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie, I don't see much of a difference between two parties.
Yeah, and Bernie's not a Democrat, by the way. He's an independent.
Well, that is very true. I apologize about you. That is very true. But I really wish I wish that you and other people would just
break apart from this two-party system and embrace the Green Party and get out of this monopoly that we have right now.
Yeah, it's actually a duopoly. But here's the problem, Zach. We don't have proportional representation in the United States. It was in the 1860s that John Stuart Mill came up with the idea that the way that voting should be done should be, you know, the representation in parliaments or in Congress should be proportionate to the vote. So if a party or a candidate got 10% of the vote, if a party got 10% of the vote, they should be able to put their candidates into 10% of the seats. If they got 33% of the vote, they should be able to take 33% of the seats. And that kind of proportional representation, at the time that John Stuart Mill invented that in the 1860s, there were only five or six democracies in the world. I mean, everybody was holding their breath to see if we would make it through the Civil War. If this experiment, with the democracy, as Alexis de Tocqueville described it in his Democracy in America in 1838, if this experiment was going to survive. And those countries that have proportional representation, they can have three, four, five, six parties. They can have all the parties that they want, and it just works just fine. But here we have first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections, and so you basically have a choice. You can have a two-party system, or you can have instant runoff voting, and that's what we've got to do. Is we've got to look at instant runoff voting.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Or proportional representation. I'll rant more about this when we come back from the break. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Luis Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researcher, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Huttenbaum, all the various groups that syndicate our program, Dial Global, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, CRN Network, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, on Dish Network and DirecTV, all the cable providers, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and all the folks in our chat room. Hey, to Alan Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, and Jay Goodman-Tamboli for our tech support, to our affiliates, our underwriters, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Thank you very much. There's a really cool program happening this weekend, happening tomorrow, that's being done by one of the unions associated with the postal workers nationwide. And Ross Fraser is on the line with us. He's a spokesperson for Feeding America, feedingamerica.org or helpstampouthunger.com are the websites. Ross, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me on to talk about this food drive.
I had somebody call yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, it might have been the day before, who said that she was a postal worker. She was a member of the local whatever it was, of whichever postal workers union it was, and that if on Saturday nationwide, if you put a can of canned food or you know, non-perishable foods, packaged food, in your mailbox, that letter carriers are going to be collecting these things to give to hungry people here in the United States. Do I have that right?
You have it right. What this is a food drive that they tried to make as simple as possible. The National Association of Letter Carriers has been doing this for 20 years.
Wow.
And they have a big commitment to helping feed hungry people in their own community. There's something like 175,000 individual letter carriers who will participate in this tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And what they'll do is they'll simply drop off the mail at your home and then pick up a bag of groceries that you leave next to your mailbox.
So it can even be bigger than your mailbox. If you leave a whole bag of groceries out by your mailbox, they'll take that, as opposed to just one can of tuna fish.
Yes, they will take as many groceries as you are able to leave. And I'll tell you, this is tremendously needed. It's so important. So, you know, if people just have a can or two of groceries that they can spare, that's fine. If they can spare more, we need it. Summer's coming. School lunch programs are going to be ending. And so it means a lot of kids won't get free or reduced price lunch or breakfast at school.
Right.
This food drive is tremendously large. Last year, they gathered 70 million pounds of food.
Wow.
Yeah, and they've been doing this for 20 years. So 70 million pounds of food. And over the last, what the benchmark that they passed last year is in total over 20 years, they've collected £1 billion of food.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah, it goes a long way. And so anybody can do something to help out.
I'm surprised that somebody like, one of these Republican senators on their high horse, Ted Cruz or Jim Inhofe, hasn't gone off on, what, government workers using government vehicles to collect food for hungry people? We can't have that. Are you getting any blowback?
I haven't heard anything, and I can't imagine that anyone would have problems with people of goodwill trying to feed neighbors who are hungry.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the world of politics. But I think it's absolutely marvelous. And so you can check out the websites, feedingamerica.org or helpstampouthunger.com for more information about this. But the really simple thing is, do you have to know that your letter carrier is a participating one, or should just everybody who's listening or watching right now leave some food out tomorrow?
I would hope that there's been publicity. I know I got a postcard in my mailbox letting me know that I should participate in this.
Mm-hmm.
We distributed several million bags stamped with the Stamp Out Hunger logo on it. Several hundred million bags were sent out throughout the United States to encourage people to do this. So if people haven't heard about it, they can always call their local post office and make sure that there's local participation.
Right.
They can even take, if it's more convenient to them, you can also drop off food at your local post office.
Sure.
As well.
And the worst thing that's going to happen is if your letter carrier is not participating, you can pick up the, it's not like you're putting perishables out there. You can just take that bag of groceries back in the house the next morning.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we need common sense things like peanut butter, tuna fish, canned pasta, something that's in a can or in a box that's shelf stable, not perishable.
Right.
And it will go a long way to help. One in six Americans is at risk of hunger right now.
It's mind-boggling in the richest country in the world. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Lots of people need lots of help. And this is one small way that everyone can participate and help feed people in their own backyard.
Yeah. And I think your point that summer is coming and these school lunch programs that a lot of kids depend upon for the nutrition that keeps their bodies and minds in good shape, those programs are going to be gone for the summer. And
yeah.
This is a beginning of filling in the cracks there.
Right. Yes. We have something like 21 million children who get free or reduced price lunch at schools. And when those close, for the most part, those kids are then left without places to go for breakfast or lunch. There's a government school food service program, but it only reaches between 2 and 3 million children.
Right.
So that leaves us with about 18 million children and their families scrambling to find enough food for them during the summer months.
Right. Wow. Incredible. Incredible. Who started this, Ross?
This was started by the National Association of Letter Carriers and the Campbell Soup Company, which is one of the major sponsors.
Okay.
Campbell's is also throwing in a million cans of soup.
So that's great. And if you've got some Campbell's soup, you can put some of that out too. Ross, thanks you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Feedingamerica.org, helpstampouthunger.com. Coming up Monday, all the news and information you missed over the weekend. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Check out pdamerica.org and movetoamend.org and free-don.com. Get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.